येन ज्ञान समिरन्धस्य ज्ञानं जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
In Ayodhya, it was declared that Lord Ram would be crowned as king. Everyone in Ayodhya was happy because everyone loved Lord Ram. And of course, especially those who were closest to him, everyone was close to him, but some were more close than others, so Kaushalya was very happy meeting his mother. And practically Ram didn't discriminate between his three mothers, so the other two were also very happy. Sumitra was very happy, and Kaikeyi was also at this news. Only one person was unhappy, Manthara. She wanted to make some mischief. So she did. The story is well known. She made a lot of mischief. It probably wouldn't have been much of a story of the Ramayana if she hadn't made the mischief, but nevertheless it was mischief. She poisoned Kaikeyi's mind. That Ram will after assuming power, he will oppress yourself and Hara. At first Kaikeyi didn't listen to what she said. She was also very happy. She was surprised to see Manthara unhappy. But Manthara, gradually, she was able to poison the mind of Kaikeyi and give Kaikeyi the means by which she could avert the upcoming disaster of Ram being crowned and Bharat being killed or exiled or relegated to a position of a non-entity by using the boon which to date she had never thought of using. She didn't. All her needs were fulfilled, and she didn't think to use the boon which she'd kept in reserve. So she used that to, well, we all know, to have Bharat installed on the throne. At least she wanted to do that, and Ram exiled to the forest. So interestingly, Kaikeyi, who was in the beginning as enthusiastic as everyone else for Ram's installation, later she became so hard-hearted that even with the pleas of Dasharath, and it was obvious that the whole city was going against her, she was adamant, intractable. And even Dasharath said, well, it'll be the death of me. And it actually was. It caused his death. But she wouldn't change. So sometimes we see that. Just like during the Serbo-Croatian war, Serbo-Bosnia-Croatian or whatever it was a very complex war, that even there were cases of a man, Serbian, whose wife was Croatian, or vice versa, who would kill his own wife because she was from the other side. So there'd been no... We can presume that up to date he hadn't thought to kill her, but due to some propaganda put in his head, he came to hate his wife for the reason that she was from the wrong side or the wrong race. In the book Freedom at Midnight, which describes India's so-called independence, which is also at the same time Pakistan's so-called independence, that one Hindu man daily for so many years on his way to work in Lahore would stop in a tea shop owned by a Muslim. Or maybe it's around the other way, I don't know. More like he's owned by a Muslim, so he wasn't a very strict Hindu, because Hindus were very, Orthodox Hindus used to be very strict who they took their tea from. It had to be from the right caste of Hindus, not to speak of taking from a Muslim. Anyway, one day he walked in as usual. In the meantime, all the hatred between Hindus and Muslims was being whipped up. And he walked in to get his cup of tea, as usual, and said he got a bullet in the head from the owner of the tea shop, who had known him for over 20 years. He was his regular customer, but he killed him because he was a Hindu. So you can see how doubts can be placed in the minds of others, even without any reason. At first, Kaikeyi, and to the extent that that person becomes actually, without cause, hating that person. Kaikeyi loved Ram, but her whole attitude changed, that she considered Ram her greatest enemy due to some doubts placed in the mind by Mantara. Now, if Kaikeyi had been more intelligent, she wouldn't have accepted what Mantara said. She would have said, well, you're saying that. What you're saying is true, that Ram is going to ascend the throne, but then his motives and what he will do after that, you're presumed he'll do the very worst things. You've no evidence for that. It's just your supposition. And we know Ram very well, and we don't find anything in his character to suggest that. Therefore, I can understand you're simply an envious rascal. She should have said that. And that's what Bharat said. Even though Bharat, when he was out of station at the time, as we say in modern Indian English, he was not present in Ayodhya. And when he got the information, despite everything Kaikeyi tried to say, to convince Bharat that, actually, I'm doing a very good thing for you, and Ram would have treated you so badly, Bharat didn't accept it. He didn't want the throne, and he rejected his mother, so she lost out also. Mantara was a professional gossip. She made a rumor with no basis in reality, with a specific purpose, political purpose. That's one that's one political method. It's if you can spread wrong propaganda, the one's enemies can accomplish a purpose even without fighting at all. It's called in the Sanskrit, in this context, the word bheda is used to divide. Sama bheda dana danda. These are the four processes of principal processes of dealing with one's enemies: to pacify them, to divide and rule, bribe them, bring them in your camp, or suppress them by force. So That can be very effective. Somewhere recently I was reading how this in America in the 1960s, 70s, something like this, there was the Black Panthers, an organization that American blacks have become militant, and the FBI, I think it was, planted rumors among the Jewish community that there were black Muslims also, that they planned to assassinate and suppress the Jews. It wasn't true at all, but the Jews, they got militant and they, you know, they got lots of money and influence and clout, and they did them in more or less. So that's internal politics. It came to light later on that they did that. So words can be very powerful if we can ascribe motives to others which may not be true. And, well, that's called character assassination, actually. It's a common technique. We see it in supposedly among, or among supposed Vaishnavas also. That when they may want to achieve some goal and they see a Vaishnava as their enemy or competitor, and they spread wrong information about him. And in this way people come to distrust him or think that he's very bad, and such an effect may be there that they can't even listen to him, even if the person says, "Oh, please, just try to understand." And they're completely closed off. They can't listen. They're so much convinced that this person is bad due to the bad propaganda of others. So we should learn not to accept the denunciation of others on face value. That means if someone says something bad about someone else, we don't have to necessarily accept that it's true. Especially if they are speculating about their motives. If someone says that such and such a person without any motivation walked up to someone else and punched him in the face, and you happen to know the person about who it's being spoken doesn't, is not known to have a habit of doing such things, you may want to confirm that first of all. That, is that actually true? Because often it's the nature of the modern world, especially, that people say things about others which are not true. Or the person might have, or it might be, there might be some truth in it, that the person had shown his fist or something, but then it becomes exaggerated. And then by the time the story gets out, it's like he had a whole gang and beat him up, and the other person was hospitalized, and only did was show his fist. So that's a bit of an exaggeration, but the tendency is to exaggerate like that. But if questioning the motives of others, then we have to be even more careful, because mind reading isn't a very common art. And even mind reading, as far as I know, there are few people who can practice that. It may be more like what we could call solid thoughts. That's a bit of an oxymoronic or phrase of clearly formed thoughts rather than motives, which are much more complex. So we should be careful when someone is accused of something, that we should first of all think, well, is the person who is speaking to me, first of all, is their word reliable? And then we have to think, the person who is being accused, do they have a habit of doing such things? Or are they known to be like that? Even then, one can reserve the benefit of the doubt, as it is said. Or in legalese, innocent until proved guilty. Or we could say, hope for the best and expect the worst about various people. Well, looks like pretty good evidence that this rascal in the corner fell asleep. So we can all accept that. It's not just a rumor. Not such a bad rascal. I'd probably do the same myself if I was on the other side of the seat, but I'm speaking as usually helps me to keep awake. So, yeah, I'm bringing this up because yesterday I was told by one of my disciples that another of my disciples had said something about another, so A, B, and C, which I questioned. I was told by A that C was taking all the services and just wants to keep power for himself. So how do you know? B says it. Okay. Well, let's examine. B is taking all the service and not letting anyone else do it. Is that actually a fact? Is it that others are not able to do the service? Or maybe B has overestimated his capacity to do all the service, but it was done in good faith and not with a bad intention. So it may be that B is taking on the service out of necessity. That's possible. Or it may be that he's doing in good faith and not realizing that he's overstretched, which might seem to be the position. So it may be that person B, who has said this about person C, has got more information than I have, and actually knows pretty much that C has cut out others from doing the service. Wrongly. It may be. But we shouldn't just presume that C is wrong. Why? Because B said so. They have some ulterior motive. It may be that they're thinking, B is thinking, well, let C be, have a break or be freed from this, and they can do some other things. We don't know. At least I don't know, because that's all I heard. But I don't know. So even though others may have made that judgment, I don't want to make it based on just because B said so. And quite likely B should investigate further. Or having done an excellent job of mind reading, one still comes to the conclusion that there's an element of Ishvara Bhav there, or wanting to lord it over others. Is that the Sthayi Bhav? Is that the main motivation? That might be an element of that. But is the main motivation that one wants to do service, or that one wants to control others? So, if there's some element of some less desirable trait, if it's only partial, then by the power of devotional service, that should be, if one's main motive is to serve, then by the power of devotional service, that should gradually become cleansed. That's a problem? No? But it could be, you know, that one person tells someone else, and then they tell someone else, and then it gets exaggerated, and in the meantime, it can cause a lot of problems, actually, too. Just like Kaikeyi caused a big problem for Ram and for everyone in Ayodhya. And ultimately for herself, too. She wasn't happy at the end of it. So we should be a little careful when we hear things said about others which are not very favorable. After years of this within Vaishnav society, I just don't accept that it's true just because someone said so. Unless I have... unless I know that person very well, I know it's not their habit to say bad things about others. Even then, it's good to reserve some judgment. Reserve one's judgment. And not condemn others simply on the basis of what one person says. Of course, that doesn't mean that one should completely turn off one's discrimination. In the case of, if we may not need direct evidence of a person's misbehavior. If we hear about it again and again and again from different people, then we can understand that either that person has got very bad luck, and he's being wrongly blamed by many people, or it's quite like, as the saying goes, where there is smoke, there's fire. There's probably some evidence of that being true. Although it also may not be, because once you start to say bad things about people, there's a saying, mud sticks. If you throw some mud, someone may try and dodge it, but it tends to stick on the bottom. Yeah, you had to put the sign, remember? Cell phones off, we can put it on the other place. Put the sign on the door before I go that place. Yeah. Put it on the auditorium while we're having the program also. Actually, make a fine. 200 rupees fine if your cell phone goes off. Have someone collecting that. Then they'll turn it off. So, yeah, there's a story, probably not true, maybe true, I don't know. That was sent to me, it's a published story, which has got nothing directly to do with Krishna consciousness, but it's a parable, you can say, not exactly a parable, but it's a proverb from Jewish wisdom, that in one town, Jewish town, many Jews or whatever, one man was speaking badly about a rabbi, telling so many stories, untrue about him. Then after some time, the man of his own accord realized that actually, it's not good. I should stop that. And he went and apologized to the rabbi and said, look, I've been spreading bad stories about you. I'm sorry, please forgive me. The rabbi said, okay, I'll forgive you, but just one thing I want you to do first. Go and purchase a feather pillow, full of feathers. And just go on the roof and cut open the pillow and just let the feathers fly everywhere. So he went and he did that and he came back and said, will you forgive me now? He said, just do one more thing. Just go and collect all the feathers. I said, well, you know, how can I do that? I spread everywhere. He said, yeah, that's true. It's just like all the things you said about me. Once they're out, you can't bring them back. And they go everywhere. You don't even know where they're going to go. But actually, as what happens is they not only do they... In the case of bad things said about others, not only do they spread everywhere, but they get exaggerated as they go along. The only good thing about this is that there's so much of this going on that people might tend to forget. There's so much bad talk about everyone that some bad talk about someone that people may not... In one sense, they take it seriously, but in another, you know, it may not be as juicy or interesting as someone. Yeah, if someone's accused of wanting to deprive others of service, that might not be as juicy, relishable, and enjoyable as some talk of someone bopping someone else on the nose. So it may tend to get forgotten. There's another anecdote, this time told by one of our acharyas. It's also got nothing directly to do with Krishna consciousness, but it is told by one of our acharyas, so I may not be accused of talking nonsense things in class, because this was told by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The anecdote of spitting at the sky. If someone wants to, they think, ah, the sky, yeah, horrible, bleh, spit on it. So the spit goes up, doesn't reach anywhere near the sky, and comes back in the face of the person who spit. So in the same way, Krishna is infinitely great, far above the platform of envious people. So, if someone spits at the sky, not only does it not go anywhere near the sky, but it comes back and in the face of the person who made it, who made that, who spat. So those who blaspheme Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, it comes back on them. The devotee is not affected. Temporarily, there may be something. The devotee is not affected by anything in this world, but his endeavor to serve Krishna can be affected. Just like in the case of person C in this regard, he's trying to do some service, and then others hear that, then think, oh, he's just trying to control us, and no, he won't do what he says, and then his service is affected. Because people distrust his motives. So, discrimination, we should know what this means. It doesn't mean that we throw out, if someone is doing something wrong, we don't just say, oh, well, it's okay. But on the other hand, it has to be ascertained, first of all, properly, if they're doing something wrong. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to quote, paraphrasing Sri Chaitanya Bhagavata, para charchoke gati nahi kono kale. Those who are inclined to gossip about others, they cannot achieve the goal of life at any time. So we should be careful about this tendency. And that saying that on one hand we want to protect ourselves and others from persons who are Vaishnavas but acting or speaking in ways that is not conducive to our spiritual benefit. So that we have to be careful. On the other hand, we shouldn't accept bad things said about others just because someone says it. The words can be very dangerous, so we should be careful. We see the difference between Kaikeyi and Bharat. Kaikeyi, she allowed her mind to be poisoned. And then after some time she presumed that Mantara was right, even though in the beginning she didn't. But she accepted it as correct. What was the difference between when Mantara first made her proposition, Kaikeyi didn't accept it. Then afterwards she did. She was just, she wasn't acting intelligently. She didn't apply intelligence. If she had suspected Ram of such a motive due to the words of Mantara, first of all, even to suspect that about Ram was not intelligent, because he had never shown any such symptom ever in his life. And very noble person. I mean, even just, of course, he's the Supreme Lord, but just from the point of view of his character, he's in the Raghu dynasty and not just born out of lust, but born out of the blessings of the rishis. So the whole line of the Raghu dynasty, the very honorable kshatriyas, all of good character. And Ram had been an exemplar of that from his very childhood. So why should anyone think, just because Mantara, whose sinfulness is manifest in her bodily shape. It's also, we are, of course, they may say genetics on this, that and the other, but we understand a hunchback is born a hunchback because of some sinful activity. So why take her word over that of what's been observed by Kaikeyi herself and others? throughout the life of Lord Rama. It doesn't make any sense. But she allowed herself. She is blameworthy. Although Rama himself, out of the goodness of his character, didn't blame her. But she is blameworthy. If there was to be a court case, and of course this has been discussed, Kaikeyi for thousands of years, her name has been synonymous with the worst kind of behavior. Not only during her own life was she hated by the citizens of Ayodhya, even though Ram didn't want them to. He forgave the citizens of Ayodhya. Bharat himself would have killed, he almost killed Kaikeyi, but only because Ram restrained him did he not do it. So, due to lack of discrimination and judging someone who is faultless to be at fault, she had to suffer. Hare Krishna. Her name is maligned. As long as the sun will rise and set, her name will be maligned. So, you could also be maligned for failing to recognize wrong. You can be punished for that also. Just like, again, here we go to the material world. Well, we're talking about material things, but we're not. This topic, I'm using an example of that from the Ramayana, because the Ramayana is meant to teach us not just bhakti, but also how to live in this world as a perfect person. That's the purpose of Lord Rama's avatar. How to live according to dharma. So, after the Second World War, in Nuremberg, in Germany, the principal officers of the Nazi regime, the ones the victors were able to catch, were tried for war crimes. There was a famous movie made about this, the Nuremberg trials, which I remember watching as a kid, and I remember some scenes from it because it's quite stark. It's difficult to imagine how, up to the present time, the word Nazi and Hitler, the words which in Europe especially are very evocative. And there's a famous wax museum of lifelike figures in London, Madame Tussauds. I never went there. People from London never go to see the sights of London. But the statue of Hitler, for years, and just recently they put it in a place where, without a glass cover, because people would always spit on it. Just recently they removed that cover because they saw the figure of Hitler and they felt it as well. He felt so nastily about him. And Hitler was a person who, you know, it's not just idle gossip. He was a very big demon, no doubt. So anyway, at these Nuremberg trials, in the movie that I saw, which presumably is based on fact, even if it's not, the example will serve our purpose here, that phenomenon of the Nazi uprising, the coming to power of the Nazis, was how apparently ordinary, respectable, good people started to do absolutely horrible things. And that also happened in the Serbo-Croatian War. I mean, people are just your normal person just starts killing his neighbors because they're from a different race. How can that happen? And we couldn't do that. We wouldn't do that. But the beast is within all of us. The demon. It appears maybe within all of us. Anyway, in this trial, they asked that one person who was sentenced to death and was subsequently executed for his war crimes for doing things, you know, being an officer in a camp in which people were executed, gassed to death. He just couldn't, till the moment he was executed, he couldn't understand what he'd done wrong. He sincerely, if you want to use that word, or genuinely believed he'd done nothing wrong. He said, well, I was just following orders. I said, I was just following, because within the German culture up to that time, if you follow orders, your prime duty is to follow orders. So if you're given an order, you have to follow it. And it doesn't matter what it is, but you have to follow it. So he couldn't understand what he'd done wrong. It's not, I didn't, it wasn't my idea to kill them all, but I was given the order to do so. You have to follow it. Interestingly, these programs of these genocidal programs, it wasn't Hitler's idea in the first place. It all came from what was considered a respectable science. I was just showing you that about eugenics. It was derived from Darwinian theory that it's the survival of the fittest. So why do we keep all the unfit people? Then, so in America, Australia, Sweden, up to the 1970s, they had in Sweden, not in America and Australia, but in the name of improving the human race, they would sterilize people who are mentally and physically what in our generation they called handicapped. Now they call them challenged. These people of subnormal, significantly subnormal intelligence, or people with severe physical defects. And Hitler's Germany took that up very strongly, and in an American magazine, they said that, no, Hitler's taken, they were praising the Germans, you see, they've gone ahead of us. They've taken our idea and gone ahead of us in sterilizing, forcibly sterilizing the gypsies, which they now call Romas. You see, they're always changing their names. And homosexuals, and then Hitler extended it a bit to kill people. He also considered the Jews a problem. So anyway, this man, he couldn't understand, you know, what did I do wrong? He didn't. But from the dharmic point of view, never mind what the United Nations Charter of Human Rights is or what the German culture is, actually they were wrong for following a wrong order. One should follow orders, that's a soldier's law. But there are rules also of combat and rules of dharma. So, dharma is always complex because human principles are always in conflict. Just like right in Manu, there's satyam bruyat priyam bruyat ma bruyat satyam apriyam. One should speak the truth. It's a moral principle. And one should also speak in a way not to cause pain to others. It's also a moral principle. And these two are always in conflict. Because the truth, not always, but is usually not pleasing. I had an experience in, well, I shouldn't tell you. Anyway, I can tell it that. In my childhood, I lent my bicycle to a friend who, surprisingly, didn't return it. And this went on for quite some time. So I went to his house and I told his mother, look, your son took my bike and he didn't return. She didn't want to hear it. She was angry. She slammed the door in my face. She didn't want to hear it. So, people often they don't like to hear what is true. So Manu recommends don't say something which is true, which is not pleasing to others. But then again, sometimes it may be necessary. That's how to resolve these two is given by Manu. But that's not an ultimate principle either. Because sometimes one should say something not pleasing to others. Just like if someone's flying a kite looking at the sky and he's on the edge of a cliff. Look out, don't disturb me, I'm flying my kite. Doesn't like to hear that. Don't disturb me. Still, you should disturb him. It's true and it's not dear, but it should be said. And that extends also to speaking spiritual truth, such as, for instance, Nate Vidu Swarzagatinhi Vishnu Durashaye Bahiratamanana Kipisha Kamtramuru Dhamni Badha. What's the last line? That is the last line. What is that? Puna Puna Sharvatasha. Is that it? I'm getting mixed up. Anyway, it's Andhaya Tandai Rupaniyama Anaste Pisha Tantra Murudami Bhagavan is one of the many truths which are not palatable to materialistic people. But people don't know that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu. Their ultimate benefit is by worshipping Vishnu. Because they're absorbed in the external. The blind follow the blind, speaking pleasant untruths of the happiness of this material world. And in this way they are bound up very tightly in material existence. So this is a lesson for me also. I'm also guilty of spreading feathers. We should be careful to discriminate, but not unnecessarily ascribe motives or nation or actions to others which may not be the fact at all. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? Gossip. The uncontrolled tongue. It may not be in the case of Mantara, that, as in the case of Mantara, that someone has any particular agenda or something. It may be just what we call idle gossip. In English, there's that adjective idle is often used as a prefix before gossip. It means just to pass the time pass. Just some thought comes in the mind and we don't control it and it comes out. That's why in spiritual life, first thing, vacho vegam. Don't just whatever comes in the mind, let it out. If vacho vegam manasa, the next is manasa. So if the mind is not controlled, then at least control the speech. Because if the mind is not controlled, then what comes out of the mouth is not going to be helpful for others or ourselves. Yeah, you want to say something?
Well, I have two questions, which one is connected with this, as you mentioned, mantra. I'm just curious whether there's the same kind of standard for, you know, for women and men, because women have...
Women have, they're famous for, among men, for being gossips.
Yeah, and also because they get...
And women are generally not, they're generally not to be punished to, to the degree that men are. But these are, we're talking general principles here. We're speaking on general principles here. Today I've stressed strongly on one side. Tomorrow I might speak about how you have to, you know, be very sharp and might emphasize more on, you know, don't be misled by people speaking or doing wrong things. So, I guess it. So, for women, is there more leeway? Yeah, but still they can cause lots of problems, whether they're women or men who are, or whoever they are. In the modern age, in democracy, everyone has a right to speak equally, which is nonsense. The people should speak who are learned and self-controlled, who know how to speak for the benefit of others. Brahmanas. Or Kshatriyas means they're trained by Brahmanas. But they also don't speak anything important without consulting Brahmanas. So in Vedic society, there was a whole class of people who were trained how to think and speak for the benefit of human society. Not just some feeling that they have in their heart, but the considering all the people, the common people would hear Ramayana, Mahabharata, but the Brahmanas would discuss. And in a human society, there are so many different kinds of things can happen. So you have to judge what is stated in, what are the rules of Shastra, what is the application we see. In this case, this was done, we find in Mahabharata this was done, then someone starts to say yes, but actually there's another case also which is more applicable, like this. So it requires to be knowledgeable and self-controlled. And self-controlled means that one acts for the benefit of others and not to exploit the situation for one's own benefit. So yes, Mantara and Kaikeyi were women. And Dasharath is an example of someone who trusted a woman, gave her boons, I'll do what you said, and he felt himself obliged to fulfill that. So practically he literally gave her power over his life, and he didn't think that she'd misuse it, but she did terribly. Before that incident, it wasn't thinkable that her mind could be corrupted. She loved Ram, he loved her. So another statement that Prabhupada often quotes, Vishwasa naiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu chanta. Never trust a woman or a politician. This saying is not very politically correct at the present time in regard to women, but it is a Shastric statement, and Prabhupada quoted it. So you may say, well, they're devotees. Yeah, they're devotees, but unless one is completely free of the lower nature, they'll have womanly nature may influence. Prabhupada gave the example of Gandhari, even though she was so exalted, that when she heard her husband to be is blind, she made herself blind. But even she had such envy of Kunti that she became so upset when Kunti delivered a child before she did. So Prabhupada gave that an example of womanly weakness, seed of envy, even she's very exalted.
Yeah, then you said
it. How should one take this criticism of others, you know, as a reaction to our own criticism in pastime, or is it, you know, is it kind of, it seems it's like unconditioned, you know, something which just, you know, anybody can criticize. I mean, even Krishna is criticized. It's not that Krishna is criticizing others.
Yeah, that's true. Even Krishna was the subject of rumors. And he wanted to clear those, rumors which were Satrajit, was it, who was making rumors against him? Krishna didn't like that in the role of a Kshatriya. He didn't like that. And it appeared that the rumor was spreading in Dwaraka, you see, where they're all devotees of Krishna. But still, there were people were inclined to believe that. Otherwise, the rumor couldn't have spread that Krishna had he'd killed Prasena, the brother of Satya. It was Krishna who did it. So Krishna wanted to clear his name. A brahmana might or might not. He may just accept, well, I deserve much worse for all my sins. And let people think what they like. I've had my share of being called various things in public, not such nice things. And my way of thinking is, well, if you want to believe all that, I mean, there are many things about me which are not good, which are not true, but many of the things I'm accused of, many of the things about me which, there are many bad things about me, I accept that, but some of the things I'm accused of, I've been accused, for instance, of being a woman hater. And if I look in my own heart, I see lots of bad things, but I don't find a hatred of women as a principle. So that appears to be unfair, but my way of thinking is, well, I could try to exonerate myself, to use a fancy word, clear my name. But why should I? If you want to believe them, let them. If they want to believe it, let them believe it. Because why should I get into a whole big thing of trying to show how nice I am to women, and I don't hate them? People want to believe it. More intelligent people will make their own judgment and conclusions if I'm that important to them anyway, and that they have to think something about me. If the Vaishnavas are thinking about me, that's mercy for me, one way or the other. But it kind of, I met for the first time last year, and it was the first day of the new year, in America, Godbrother, to say it another way, I'd never met him before,
who's actually one of the most influential devotees in our society. And we were discussing and about various issues, and not just, you know, passing time, but some practical issue. We were both from different sides of the globe become involved in some actual project. So then towards the end of our conversation, he started talking to me about how in his experience there are many women who are actually very intelligent. And so I said, yeah, and obviously Prabhupada, and the statements of Shastra and Prabhupada that women are less intelligent, it's contextual. It's not that every woman is less intelligent than every man, and there are women who are university professors. Actually, I think there's more than men nowadays in America. So obviously it's contextual, it's not an absolute statement. But it struck me that the fact that he brought that up made, probably brought that up because years after all that stuff goes on, my reputation is of, among people who don't know me, maybe that I'm a womanhood. So yeah, mud sticks. How should we face it? Well, I'm a bit withdrawn, you could say. I associate with devotees who I can get on with, and I certainly have what could be called certain views on gender issues which might tend to upset many people in ISKCON. But I don't deal with such people very much. And if so, I don't bring up these issues. Because what's the point? When I say views, I don't really think it's views, because it's backed by Shastra, and from what I can see, it's backed. It's not just some kind of anomaly in Shastra, it's actually a fact. When I say don't trust women, now this, of course, what I'm about to say would confirm among persons who think that I'm a woman hater, that I am a woman hater, but it seems to be confirmed by experience that women aren't trustworthy. And there's several cases I know of women who, after many years being married, just without any good reason, just completely turn against their husbands. Of course, husbands may do it to wives also, and not just, you know, turn against them, but just abandon them. So anyway, these are complex issues. My approach is to not get involved directly. I haven't given up on the issue. I'm not on that particular issue. I'm a bit quiet on it, but I intend to bring out books. That's my long-term response to all these things. Books intelligently written, to the extent that Krishna gives me intelligence, and so that intelligent people may accept what's there, or at least give it a good perusal. And so, as far as getting into slanging matches on the internet, I have absolutely no interest. Here also in Udupi, recently you told me last night that the leader who was here, the ISKCON leader, was removed, but there's someone else from the congregation was saying actually he was doing very well. And I'd heard bad things about him from various sources, but my own experience of him was good. And that's, you know, obviously had his drawbacks, but when one time certain members of the congregation, they were complaining so much about him, I said, okay, let's call a meeting. And then I called a meeting. And when it came down to it, he was there with them, and they had actually nothing of any import to say bad about him. There was just their bias, actually. So it seems like here that I don't know what happened, but some kind of gossip got out of control or something. And a man who, according to the report of someone else, was actually doing very well, was just removed. It was a big mess, just based on the what some people said, who themselves didn't have the same level of commitment. So I don't know exactly what happened. I don't really want to get involved in all this, but at least the devotee who was removed should have had a fair hearing. I wouldn't have trusted what a few people said. I would have said, well, is there anyone who has anything good to say about him? I would have vowed.